Hello, everyone. Donald Trump, during recent presidential campaign, repeatedly blamed Joe Biden for the responsibility of the war in Ukraine. And although at face value, this statement may sound pretty absurd, I think it points to some important topics that are barely addressed in public sphere. And in today's discussion, I would like to raise the following issue. Does Biden bear any responsibility for the war in Ukraine? And if he does, what is his responsibility? And let me just jump straight into the topic by introducing this timeline that I will fill throughout the video to point to some important events during 2021. And let me just start by saying an empirical fact that Russia invaded Ukraine roughly 1 year after inauguration of Joe Biden. Is this a coincidence? Is this some type of relationship between two events? Well, I think I'll discuss it throughout the video, but I think it's just important to notice that fact. So if we think about the year 2021 and the new American administration coming into power, if we want to address the question of Biden's responsibility, we need to understand what exactly changed with Biden administration. Or in other words, what changed in American foreign policy in relation to Ukraine with Joe Biden. And let me just start by introducing you some important context for this discussion. If you think about Joe Biden's profile in relation to Ukraine, you have a following picture. First of all, Joe Biden ran his presidential campaign with the slogan of restoring American leadership in the world. As such, he is and he was a prominent internationalist in foreign policy issues, meaning he promotes strong American engagement with world affairs. Second point is that Joe Biden was a very strong supporter, and still is a very strong supporter of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity throughout his political career. The most prominent example of that is his position during Obama's administration as vice president, where he basically coordinated sanction campaign against Russia after Russia annexed Crimea in 2014. He also claimed in his memoirs that integration of Ukraine is his life mission and his mission to make a positive change in the world. And on top of that, he promised to make Ukraine his foreign policy priority during presidential campaign. So this is like very important context that we should find in 2021 when Biden becomes the president. And Let me just start by introducing you the first change that happened with the Biden administration. So especially if you think through Ukraine's perspective, Biden presidency introduced a quite staggering hope that things could change. Again, if you just take into consideration support for Ukraine throughout his career, his internationalist stance, you get just a sense of hope that something could change. And of course, when we talk about Ukraine, this something means Ukraine admission to NATO. And just to prove this point, I would like to give you a snippet of interview that Zelensky gave to HBO in February 2021, where he asked President Biden directly why Ukraine wasn't still part of NATO. So he is a part of this interview. And in this interview, journalist asks Zelensky, and what do you think he, Biden, would answer to that, to the question of why Ukraine is still not in NATO? And the answer is the following. I believe the answer may sound like this. Mr. President, we consider Ukraine a strategic partner. We understand that it really has a powerful army in Europe today and protects not only Ukrainian, but also European citizens in the east of the country. That is why Ukraine should accede to NATO during my presidential term. So as you can see in these words, his ambition is pretty clear. Or you can say his hope or his expectation is pretty clear. That he expects from Biden some unequivocal act that would allow Ukraine to become NATO member during his presidency. And this leads me to my second change that happened Biden administration. So as I mentioned previously, Ukraine was his foreign policy priority that he stressed during his presidential campaign. And in a way, he delivered immediately on that. And what he did exactly, he significantly increased rhetorical support of Ukraine in 2021. This rhetorical support had many aspects to that. But here are the most prominent things I want to mention in this respect. First of all, like famously during Munich Security Conference in 2021, Biden framed Ukraine as a vital concern for Europe and the US. And he also encouraged European allies to take initiative and to do something in this direction. Biden's administration, in numerous documents, started using this phrase of supporting Ukraine's Euro-Atlantic aspirations. And I think this is an important point to make, because this is a sort of a new wording that appeared with the Biden administration. And what I try to say is that during first Trump presidency, his administration didn't use this framing, so to speak. But Biden administration coming into introduced it. And it sounds as supporting Ukraine's Euro-Atlantic. The third important facet of this policy is endorsement of NATO open door policy, which again goes hand in hand with supporting and advancing Ukraine's Euro aspirations. Fourth important point is the support of the Crimean platform. Crimean platform was a Ukrainian initiative to return Crimea via diplomatic means. If you want, you can read up on this initiative. And fifth point I want to make is the following. Despite rhetorical commitment to Ukraine, US was still pretty ambiguous in relation to direct question of NATO enlargement to Ukraine. In other words, it just omitted this question and instead tried to emphasize NATO open door policy and tried to emphasize its support for Ukraine's Euro-Atlantic aspirations. This leads me to the third change. So the third change that also happens with Biden coming to power is the increased military support of Ukraine. Again, here it also has many layers to that, but I want to highlight just mainly two important points. The first point is that US invited Ukraine to the biggest military exercises since the end of the Cold War, Defender Europe 2021, which is a very important development, because obviously Ukraine participated, especially in the exercises that related to the Black Sea. And also US increased its military aid to Ukraine. So those are two important policy decisions in relation to increased military support. And what we have immediately, just to give you a timeline, is just first 3 months, and we already had a very strong Russian response to that. And this response was first Russian military build on Ukraine's border that was happening during March to April 2021. Here again, just important to think about, and during the period from March to April, you have a lot of discussions going on whether Russia would actually invade Ukraine. Russian military buildup was the biggest since 2014, since Russia invaded Ukraine, and it introduced a lot of kind of uncertainty and a lot of debates in policy making community. However, you know, the further escalation was avoided by American initiative to initiate discussion with Russians. And it happened in mid-April when Biden called Putin and promised to arrange the meeting between the two. And of course, in relation to US-Russia relations, this was an important step, because as you know, US-Russia relations were in a very tense spot already, and just meeting between presidents, they just don't really happen. They didn't happen regularly. I mean, they obviously don't happen now, but even back then, the last meeting before 2021 summit was meeting between Putin and Trump back in 2018. So as such, we see that Russia, due to the fact that Biden called Putin, Russia immediately de-escalated the situation by withdrawing its troops from the border. And here you have, this expectation of Putin-Biden summit in Geneva. And in relation to that, I want to point to one important thing. I would like to say one important thing about this period of time. When people analyze the prelude to Russian-Ukraine war, they tend to focus a lot on months that precede the war, immediately precede the war. They focus on the period from December to February. However, I would argue that events that happened here, in other words, events that happened from April to June, they significantly determined the dynamic of the conflict. I think one can also argue that they made the war, in a sense, unavoidable, or they made the further escalation unavoidable. And let me just try to prove this point in the rest part of my discussion. So let me just summarize briefly what we already discussed here. So if we summarize the exact changes that Biden administration introduced, we see three following things. First of all, reinvigorated Ukrainian expectations, which was really important, because during this period of time, we see a significant increase of diplomatic exchanges between Ukrainian officials and NATO officials, as well as between Ukrainian officials and American officials. Second, we see very strong rhetorical endorsement of Ukraine and also American endorsement of NATO's open door policy, which was also a prominent thing because during Trump presidency, during first Trump presidency, the US didn't invoke NATO open door policy. In a sense, it was still there. The US never abandoned NATO's open door policy, but it also just never, did not emphasize it. So in this sense, it is an important development. And the third point is an increased military support of Ukraine. So here we have three changes that Biden administration introduced. However, it's important to notice that despite those changes, especially if you think from Ukraine's perspective, those positive changes that you see with Biden administration, you also see one staggering problem. One problem that I would argue still exists with us today. And this problem closely relates to American ambiguous position in relation to NATO, or in relation to Ukraine's bid to join NATO. And how do we see this problem playing out in 2021? So the way I would like to think about it is the following. On the one hand, we have a strong US endorsement of NATO's open door policy. This leads to Ukrainian expectations that things could change. Or in other words, that the US come in and champion for Ukraine's bid in NATO. However, this just simply doesn't happen, or it didn't happen in 2021. It also doesn't happen really now. In other words, you just have this very shaky policy position, American policy position, that just very ambiguous, right? It's not something that is clear cut. It's not something that's a clear cut. And it leads to a lot of, for example, here I would like to give you a quote from Zelensky, and this is his quote. This is his quote that he gave just before Putin Biden meeting in June 2021, where he says basically, if we are talking about NATO and the membership action plan, I would really like to get from Biden specifics, yes or no. We must get clear dates and leave likelihood and the likelihood of this for Ukraine. In other words, again, if you think from Ukrainian perspective, American rhetorical support gave a lot of anxiety to Ukraine because it complicated the situation. Of course, it also complicated the situation because in the meantime, you clearly have an uptick in escalation, so to speak, from the Russian side. So instead of giving anything, any specific or any clear idea regarding Ukraine's future in NATO, US decided just to have a strong rhetorical support of the country, or rhetorical support of Ukraine. And I think nothing encapsulates better this ambiguity than a meme from this time where, Ukraine knocks on NATO's open door, and instead of receiving any kind of clear reply, it just receives a reply, that the door is open, so you can come in. But, when Ukraine raises the issue that the door is actually closed. It's really not open, at least not open right now, you know. And the US reiterate once again, you know, the door is open. You can come in. But obviously it's not. And you can see how this policy, leads to a lot of frustrations on Ukrainian side. So here I want to give you a quote from Ukraine's foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, who said Kyiv was grateful to NATO for constant confirmation of the open door policy, but not a single step has been taken to implement it. So this is sort of a mood in Kyiv. And it also places Ukraine in this very precarious situation because it's not like they can... It puts Ukraine in a situation because it's not like Ukraine can raise strong objections to this policy because it is a recipient of security from the US. So as such, it really tries to balance in this position when it has Russian troops on the border, it has seemingly good rhetorical support, and yet this rhetorical support leads to nowhere, to be honest, because it doesn't really provide Ukraine with security guarantees. However, it's also important to understand that if we look at other perspectives, not only Ukrainian perspective, but other perspectives, in a way, NATO open door policy sort of equates to support for Ukraine's NATO bid. You can definitely see this from a NATO perspective. And you can also see it from Russian perspective, because for Russia, it just basically means the same thing. You know, if you endorse open door policy, it means that one day Ukraine will join NATO. And you can see how it plays out in in NATO summit that happened on June 14th, 2021. And here I want to emphasize one thing. So as you can see, NATO summit in Brussels happened 3 days before Putin-Biden summit in Geneva. And this is a very important thing to notice and to understand. Because as I will demonstrate to you right now, this NATO summit actually made a very important decision that probably escalated the conflict, that probably actually resulted in the war, so to speak, in 2022. And this decision was the following. Adopting NATO summit communique, NATO made this decision. And I'm just going to read it. So we, 13 NATO allies, reiterate the decision made at the 2008 Bucharest summit that Ukraine will become a member of the alliance with the membership action plan as an integral part of the process. We reaffirm all elements of the decision as well as subsequent decisions, including that each partner will be judged on its own merits. We stand firm in the support of Ukraine, Ukraine's right to decide its own future and form policy course free from outside interference. So if you think about broader dynamic in US-Russia relations, in US-NATO relations, this is a very significant decision because it basically reiterates, you know, 2008 Bucharest summit decision for the first time, and it basically states that the enlargement process would eventually occur. In other words, it just reiterates this policy decision, but the importance of this, but the importance of the decision happening 3 days before Putin-Biden summit is something that, you know, I really want to highlight. Well, in other words, if you think from the timeline perspective, not NATO summit communique was issued just 3 days before Putin-Biden summit in Geneva. And if you think from Russian perspective, probably this summit for Russia was a chance to discuss something substantial. And I don't mean to discuss as if to make certain official decisions, probably just to have a certain backdoor diplomacy, certain decisions that probably would never be public, but at least that would give Russia maybe some type of guarantees or some type of results that Ukraine wouldn't join NATO. But as we see with the NATO summit communique, well, decision was already made. And, you know, from American perspective, NATO summit communique perfectly makes sense because the US wanted to demonstrate to Russia its sort of NATO's unified position, and it wanted to come to, you know, to this meeting with a decision that, you know, up to Russia to change, so to speak. But it also introduces another problem that even if you had some slim chances of diplomacy in this Putin-Biden summit, well, you know, I would definitely argue that they were completely lost because there was no point in this summit after NATO communique. Let me just go back again to timeline in a broader picture and think about the following things. Let me notice something. So Russia, as it is very well known, Russia started amassing troops to Ukrainian border around November 2021. So in other words, we have just a couple of months from Putin-Biden summit to another uptick in escalation that actually, you know, resulted in war. And, you know, from analysis perspective, it's important to understand, did something really happen during this period of time? Because when you follow Western narrative, when you follow Western media, it looks like nothing really happened. You know, Russians just out of blue amassed the troops and, you know, just went all in with this invasion without no provocation, without any, so to speak, not responding to anything, but just, you know, doing their own thing. And, you know, I would strongly disagree with this because, as I can demonstrate you, Biden policy introduced another important change in relation to Ukraine. So let me just again reiterate what I already mentioned. So you have three major policy changes. You have reinvigorated Ukraine's expectations. You have rhetorical support of Ukraine and also rhetorical support of NATO's open door policy. And you have increased military support. And to this, I would like to introduce fourth change that happens with Biden administration. And again, this fourth change corresponds to the period from June to November. And this change, you can frame it as frame it as such. US basically declared Ukraine a strategic ally. And it declared Ukraine a strategic ally first in September 2021, and then reiterated this decision in November 2021. First time the US did it when Zelensky visited Washington again in September, they issued this joint statement on the US-Ukraine strategic partnership. And second time they developed on this. And, you know, when Dmytro Kuleba visited Washington, they drafted US-Ukraine chat on strategic partnership. And long story short, those documents basically frame Ukraine as an indispensable American ally. And in relation to this, if you want, you can again go and read these documents on your own. I don't want to recite them or anything like this. But for example, from the charter, the Ukraine Strategic Partnership, you can find this phrase that the United States supports Ukraine's right to decide its own future foreign policy course, free from outside interference, including with respect to Ukraine's aspiration to join NATO. And also, again, Bucharest Summit declaration mentioned, and now Brussels Summit communique of 2021. And again, if you think from the perspective of conflict dynamic, this is, again, a very big decision that US administration made. That's a very strong signaling that no matter what, Ukraine would become part of NATO. Again, there's no time frame, but eventually it would. This is what US was trying to say by this. So, and again, if we bring this kind of, if we bring a timeline and put those two documents in the on it, you can understand now, you know, how the conflict from the Russian perspective escalated further. Or in other words, why there was suddenly an uptick in Russian behavior in November. Which, you know, resulted famously in Russia sending its treaty on security guarantees in December, and eventually invading Ukraine in February 2022. Which, you know, I think the whole treaty on Russian security guarantees is a pretty interesting topic for another discussion. But now let me come back to the question that I posed in the beginning of this video. So, does Biden bear any responsibility for the war in Ukraine? Well, based on provided evidence, I would say he bears responsibility for creating a, so to speak, security vacuum in Ukraine that Russia eventually seized. In other words, it is a responsibility. It is an indirect responsibility, but responsibility is still there. You cannot say that Biden had nothing to do with the conflict dynamic. Of course, he did, but he did in this way of creating a situation where Russia was free to invade Ukraine. And what I mean by that, if we want to think about it in three levels, so to speak. So the first thing that I want to mention again is the Biden responsible for having like this excessive rhetorical support without clear actions. And in a way it played out, of course, that when situation escalated, the US only increased rhetorical support, but it failed to provide any security guarantees to Ukraine that you really needed, so to speak. And then, of course, when Russia approached the US and offered some type of negotiations, US refused to negotiate, despite the fact that it also refused to provide security guarantees. In other words, it just messed up the situation in a very indirect way, but by ability, particular sense, was still. And I want to just finish my discussion by bringing this quote by Zelensky that he gave in Munich Security Conference 2022, just, you know, days before the invasion, where he said to its Western audience, "We are told the door is open, but so far authorized access only. If not all members of the alliance want to see us, or all members of the alliance do not see us, be honest. Open doors are good, but we need open answers, not open questions for years." And with this, I will conclude my presentation. So thank you very much. If you want to see more videos in relation to the war, in relation to the events that preceded the war, please like and subscribe, and you can expect more similar videos in the future.